Hello and welcome to the second season of the Global Energy Transition Podcast, presented by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung European Union and the Global Energy Transition Blog. I am your host, Michael Buxbaum, lead blogger, photojournalist, and advisor to theenergytransition.org. Last season, we looked at how the energy transition was developing around the world, but Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine and the international response to it has altered and largely weaponized the energy transition, the whole of which has now morphed into something like a global energy crisis. This toxic combination, now imposed onto an ever-worsening climate emergency, is in some ways slowing and in other ways accelerating our vital clean and renewable energy transition. Now, as fossil gas and coal prices soar, solar and wind energy prices, they remain stable at zero. And study after study shows that building new solar and new wind capacity is still cheaper than building new fossil fuels or building new nuclear. And it's cheaper both short-term and long-term. So for this second season, though, we are going to shine a spotlight on this triple crisis of climate, energy, and inflation that we now face, and discuss and show how these challenges are intertwined and affecting communities worldwide. Like the blogs we publish, all our materials fall under a Creative Commons license and are therefore free for anyone to use, so long as you credit the material. As the climate crisis envelops us, we intend for this podcast series to inform listeners about other additional tools being developed to deal with what's ahead. Though we may not be in the same boats, we all face the same gathering storm. Energy prices, inflation, and emissions are rising along with our thermostats. To open our second season, we are going to train our gaze and focus on a nation that today finds itself playing a surprisingly key role in supplying European countries, particularly Germany, with a replacement for Russian coal and other fossil fuels, the Latin American nation of Colombia. Brimming with vital biodiversity, jungles, and forests, this Andean nation is also rich in natural resources. Rich being somewhat in quotation marks or air quotes, because while inside the national borders that land holds vast stores of hard coal, oil, and fossil gas, the wealth these fossil fuels bring are not at all being evenly divided amongst the population, not even close. In fact, with the exception of a select few, given that some 98% of Colombia's coal, oil, and gas is exported, the extraction and development of this wealth is or has largely immiserated much of Colombia's 51 million people, sowing violence, lawlessness, and decades of cocaine-fueled civil war. Though a fragile peace exists today, it's very uncertain if or for how long this will last. As of early August, the nation is embarking on a whole new chapter as a new left-wing government led by Gustavo Petro and Francia Marquez seems set to create a sea change of how Colombia's mostly foreign-owned extraction companies can or will mine or will be permitted to mine or extract oil and coal and gas, and, going forward, who will benefit from these activities. As the new government introduces land reform measures and increases corporate taxes, it intends to move forward with an aggressive clean energy transition, constructing and expanding wind and solar generation. However, this green development is set to happen in many of the same regions where coal mining is happening today, impacting the same indigenous and Afro-Colombian populations who have been most affected by decades of strip mining and forced land grabs. And though the new Petro government may want to reduce fossil fuel development and eventually phase it out completely, the economic reality is that the nation of Colombia is deeply in debt, and selling off those fossil fuels is one of the few ways they have to service and reduce those foreign debts. And now, given the triple crisis we are in, even as the coal, oil, and gas mined and extracted from beneath Colombia's lands and waters is fetching record prices, the cost for everything else, including food, medicine, and other necessities, is also rising, forcing some really hard choices onto an already impatient population. Adding more pressure as Europe, specifically Germany, actively shuns and moves away from Russian fossil fuels, its coalition government, led by Chancellor Olaf Scholz of the centrist SPD party, has reversed course and is now, despite the acknowledged human rights abuses that clearly makes Colombian coal blood coal, back in April of this year, Scholz personally called the previous president of Colombia, the much more business-friendly Iván Duque, and announced that Germany was going to need that coal after all and would like to start reshipments in massive quantities as soon as possible. For this episode, the first of two that we will have on Colombia, we interview the Spanish-German journalist Judith Alonso, who has written extensively for Deutsche Welle Español and other outlets about Colombia's coal mines, the impacts of mining there and fossil fuel extraction, and how activists on both sides of the Atlantic have been trying to change or stop what has become an increasingly toxic relationship. Stay tuned. Judith, thanks so much for coming on the show and giving us your sense of what's going on in Colombia. Let's just dive right in. Please bring us up to speed.
Thanks for inviting me. This is interesting topic because Colombia is right now one of the countries in Latin America that it seems that it is doing more efforts in this energy transition. But of course, it has also problems. And one of the biggest problems is coal. The thing is that although Colombia is not using this coal that is producing in the north of the country, in this area called La Guajira, it's selling most of the part of its production to another countries, one of them Germany. The thing is that energy is that they are using in the country is more focused in hydro. But since some years ago, they start to develop more renewable energies. So also this area, La Guajira, is powerful in sun and wind. But the thing is that in this area, there are indigenous people living there, call it Guayú. So they have now to deal between conflicts that this coal mine is producing since 40 years ago that they start their activity in this area. And now with other projects that the government is pushing to do in this area. As I told you, there's a lot of power in sun and wind.
Okay, thank you for that. I think there's just so much background here that we need to kind of wade through for a moment. So from a geological perspective, Colombia's coal is really good. I mean, if you're a coal burner, right? And one of Colombia's biggest markets is Europe. And previously, one of its biggest users in Europe was Germany. So though Germany has moved forward with its own coal exit, despite whatever bump or spike in generation that's happening now as a response to what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, Germany, however, did stop the mining of hard coal here, but they didn't stop the burning of that hard coal. So that just means they need to import it from somewhere else. And in the more recent past, quite a bit of that coal was coming from Colombia, specifically from the El Cerrajón mine, or the Monster, as it's called, the mine. This is the largest open cast mine in Latin America. It's owned by the Swiss mining and commodities trader Glencore, which posted nearly $19 billion in profits for the first half of 2022. That's more than double last year's profits during this time. And it's almost all because of these insanely high coal prices. So though Germany had previously more or less stopped importing Colombian coal precisely because of the human rights problems associated with it, and instead turned to Russian coal great job, previous governments. As we fear now freezing this winter, it seems like, at least here in Germany, we'll burn just about anything we can get a hold of. So now, Judith, as you were saying, the area around El Serrajón and a lot of the other mines is, of course, lived in by various peoples, particularly the Wayuu people, which is the largest indigenous group in the region. And literally, they're the ones who are being directly affected by this mining. Could you go back to and talk about a bit more about how the Wayuu people are being directly impacted by the mining that's taking place around them?
No, the thing is this, that if we see now how the area changes these past years, there are some studies that shows that at the beginning, agriculture has a quite strong activity here, but since the 2000 and since now, coal and gas are the main activities in this area. And the thing also that to do this, to produce coal, do you need a lot of water? So this is one of the most problems that these Wayuu people has, that they had a kind of a small river that was not so far from of its community, but with the activities of the mine, the direction of this water changed. So, and they start not to have problems to have access to this water, but also as they are using the resources that they have in this area, in land and rivers, it's also difficult also to fish. Then there's a lot of conflicts in this sense. And also in Latin America, they have, the companies that want to do a project, they have this, they must do a consultation, to ask the communities or to present the communities their plans or the things that they will do this. So it's an article of ILO, the 169. So that in Spanish it says that consulta previa informada. So this is something that they didn't do. So there are discussions with the company, and this topic also, this issue was also in the tribunals. And there are several actions against the coal mine, but it's always difficult to get the actions that this company compromised to do to mitigate their activity in this area. And the thing is that there is now this this discourse with Germany that they don't want to use the gas from Russia because with all this crisis with Ukraine. But they are using coal from Colombia, but this coal is produced with vulneration of human rights of these communities.
So there is a series of compounding events that are hurting the Wayuu people, who are affected not only by El Serrajón, but also other mines, including mines owned by the U.S.-based Drummond Corporation, which have also been linked to several murders of labor or environmental activists. But the mining companies, as well as both the government and several other organizations, have also long been accused or been found guilty by various courts of bribery or involvement with illegal or guerrilla and paramilitary activities and all manner of civil rights and human rights violations, a sort of toxic stew, right?
Exactly. The thing is that Colombia is the thing is that the most important issue in this energy transition or cutting emissions in Colombia, we can say like this. The thing is that the most part of the emissions that Colombia is producing is for deforestation. So the thing is that, yes, of course, they want to also to change this model and to get out of fossil fuels. But the thing is that in this case, to cut emissions, they have to deal with fighting against the deforestation. But, and this is one of the biggest issues in their strategy for 2050 to be a carbon neutral country. That this is a plan that not a lot of countries in Latin America have done, because it's only Costa Rica, Chile, and Panama that, and after right now, Colombia, that they announce with President Iván Duque. He presented this strategy at COP26 in Glasgow. And the thing is this. So deforestation, to cut the deforestation is one of the biggest things that they have to do to achieve this compromise. And after also not to expand this energy capacity and not focus only in hydro, that as I told you before, it's the most important part, no, or the most important source, and try to do other projects linked with sun and wind. So this area, as we say before, is quite rich in these two sources. But for example, in transport, like electricity buses, Colombia is one of the most advanced countries in the region. And for example, with cities like Bogota and Medellin, with a lot of buses, electric buses running. Yeah, so they are doing this exercise at the same time. They are in the way, but the thing is this, that to do this energy transition, at least in this area, they must also to be account the people that is living there. So they must assure that this transition is a social and justice.
This then is the second part of this tragedy. As Colombia goes ahead with its own clean energy transition, unfortunately, some of the best wind and solar resources are located exactly in the same region where the YU are already being impacted by coal mining. So how are they responding to this now? Are they protesting this?
So the thing is that since long time ago, they are doing this kind of actions against, no, this coal mine and putting this topic in justice hands. But yes, it's long process that take time, and they had some answers from the coal mine company, and this company must to do some actions to mitigate the activity there. But it's the thing is that also that this area, it's quite poor. It's in like a half a desertic area. So, and it's they feel like they are, the government is not taking care of them. And it's like they are in a rural area. Although they have all these rich resources, they don't feel that the government helped to develop them. And they, for example, they have this problem with water. That is something basic, no, for the daily life. And we saw it during the pandemic, no? We needed to wash, no, our hands to, like, one of the basic rules, no, to not be affected of this virus. But they don't have neither this basic, no, resource.
So you're saying that the villages around the Cerrejón mine don't necessarily even have running water or access to running water?
Exactly. So the company has to provide water with people that are going there and giving some water to daily use.
How much of the land in Colombia is actually being legally protected? How much is being protected from further exploitation?
So the thing is that the protection, the natural protection areas in Colombia, it's also a big issue that the new government have to take care, because there is Colombia has a lot of natural national parks that they are quite rich with biodiversity. We must remember that Colombia is one of the 10 most biodiversity countries in the world. So as there is also areas that are, you can find Amazonian forest there. So the thing is that deforestation is one of the most important problems, environmental problems there. And a lot of this deforestation is happening in this that normally the government is taking care. The thing is this, that there is also, they have a lot of space, a lot of land and marine areas protected, but after they don't have the resources to guarantee that these areas are protected, in fact.
So as all this economic activity, primarily coal mining, is deforesting the lands, as this occurs, the Colombian government, you're saying, is trying to protect these parks, these protected spaces, by putting forth legislation and new laws that, in theory, could protect them from further development. But it's really difficult to enforce them. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, because you have to remember that there is in these parks or the areas that are around these parks, yes, there is also this problem with coca
production, meaning producing cocaine, correct?
Exactly. And the thing is this, for example, I was talking yesterday, I was with some people that they were doing this activity that right now they are in a project that is supported by the German government, that they change, no, the coca for cacao. So this activity, they are cutting deforestation. But it's this kind of projects takes a lot of time because it's this. As I told you, these rural areas have been abandoned, no? And the government was not entering in these areas because there was these paramilitary groups, narco groups also. So the people were living there. They were doing this activity as a way to earn money for these people, no? But the thing is that some of them, they start to change their mind and to see that this is also coca. Also, it's a kind of crop that it takes a lot of space and it's like extractivism of the earth. So they saw that with the cacao, they can cut deforestation and they can also cover degraded lands. And also this kind of crops helps also to do conservation of the species that are living there. So there are more advantage than with coca crop.
Coca production. So at the end of the day, what we're saying is that the German government or other governments are asking folks or helping to support folks in Colombia to stop producing coca or cocaine, but instead produce other crops which are less environmentally impactful. But then you also have the fact that the coal mines are using up a tremendous amount of water, which is in scarce supply. And then there's a third problem with water as well as land, which is that there is an ongoing attempt to introduce fracking to Colombia because Colombia has a lot of fossil gas or methane resources. And okay, what is the status of fracking now, Judith? Where are we? Where is the new government going to go with this? And what do you see coming out of this?
Okay, so fracking, it's something also quite polemic and it was because this, no? Because the government is saying that they are pushing for this energy transition. In fact, the last Berlin energy dialogue transitions, the people from government speaking here, talking about green hydrogen to produce. But the thing is, this is at the international level, no? Because at the national level, they are pushing for these other projects that it makes not sense what they are explaining at the rest of the world. So these fracking projects, they start to do a kind of pilots, but it seems that with the new government, with Gustavo Petro, they will stop it. Because one of the things that he said during this political campaign is that he wants to really stop climate change and to really push the energy transition in Colombia.
Let's break that down a bit for our listeners. We're recording this just ahead of the new government coming into power in early August. So as the Duque government leaves power and the new government comes in, can you talk a little bit more about this major political sea change that's about to take place? The new government of Gustavo Petro represents quite a radical departure. Can you explain this a little bit more?
Yeah, of course. So the thing is that this new president that is coming at 7th August, he's a quite known person in Colombia because he was voted as mayor some years ago, but because also he was also linked with guerrillas in the past. So these elections were quite polemical because, yes, there is some part of the population that are not agree with him. But finally, in this election, the rural areas and the areas that they know the government was not taking care during the past years really did the difference. And because they really collect all these votes that finally give the chance Gustavo Petro to be president in Colombia. And that he's with the best vice president. It's a woman, that it's Francia Marquez, that it's also quite a popular person in these areas because she's a black woman, that she represents, you know, this Afro community and women, but also rural. And she was involved involved in environmental issues in the past. She won this Goldman Prize award some years ago. So there is a nice match between these two people. And the thing that they were pushing with environment, social and justice issues during all the campaign. Everything that is linked with take care of the environment and conservation and trying to do social justice is things that we expect that they will do during this new government.
The new government is coming in then as the long civil war has ended, but is it still simmering? I mean, how does reform play into his campaign?
One of the points of Gustavo Petro's campaign was to implement this peace agreement. The Article 1, for example, is linked with the fact of giving land to people that has not access. Also, with implementing this article, you are also decreasing deforestation.
Sounds like a win on all levels. But ahead of the transition to the new Pedro government, Germany's Scholz-led coalition and Scholz himself did reach out again personally to the more industry-friendly Duque to secure more energy supplies, especially coal, right?
So Germany right now, with all this Russian crisis, is looking for how to save the winter that is coming. So I think they are a little bit not desperate, but we will say that they are not looking which countries can be the partners to do this. As Colombia is providing all this coal to Germany, they are trying to push what can be other options. So there is also an interest to develop renewable energies there. And there was some discussions some weeks ago with people from cooperation departments. This is something that I see that I think that we will see in the next months, because for Germany, Colombia is one of the most important partners in this sense. Not only because at the international cooperation level, also, as I told you, this project that I explained about to change cocoa for cacao is supported, funded by
the German government.
Exactly. And the thing is that it's not the only one. They have quite a lot of projects to conserve or preserve the Amazonian forest.
So on the one level, there's all this international funding to protect Colombia's environment. On the other hand, Colombia is a major swing supplier of coal for European other markets. So you mentioned the civil war a few moments ago, which was obviously very bloody, but though it has largely ended, Colombia is still one of the most dangerous places to report from and to be an activist in, particularly around environmental and labor issues. Could you talk a bit about what has happened to the folks that you've reported on or have worked with and how they have faced reprisals from both the government and also the paramilitaries?
As you say, and as several reports from several organizations, but one of the most popular is Global Witness. It says that Colombia is a lethal country for activists in the world, also not for the environmental defenders, but also for social defenders. In fact, they launched a kind of quite new agreement in the world that it says Acuerdo de Escazú, that it's a regional agreement that seeks to take care, to protect these environmental defenders. And it started some years ago in Costa Rica with discussions to how to do it. And finally, last year, it came after some countries that signed this agreement and also ratified. So right now, some months ago, there was the first COP of this Acuerdo de Escazú. But Colombia only signed this agreement. It was during COP25 in Madrid, but never ratified. So this is quite curious also, because there is quite a polemic also with this agreement, because some groups that are more linked with companies are afraid that maybe this agreement can have some... can affect their activities. But one of the things that also Gustavo Petro said that he will ratify. So it's not like the final solution, of course, but it's a step forward.
It's indeed a step forward into a better system. You have, Judith, you have interviewed folks from the Colombian opposition on this side of the pond in Germany. Yeah, you've talked to folks from Colombia who are working to put pressure on the government here in Germany, correct?
So I was talking with some of the people that is involved in La Guajira and El Cerrejón activities that they came to Germany to explain their situation there, because finally is something that German people, they know. They came to give this information and to discuss with German activists. And they also went to this coal mine that we have here in Germany, that it's not so far, and that is also putting problems and pushing people that are living there to look for another place.
And these activists, then they visited the Hambach and Garzweiler mines, and they saw firsthand then some of the communities and towns there that are being threatened with destruction, correct?
Exactly. So they saw that we are far, but we are close, because finally we are sharing the same problems. Okay, with different situation or different backgrounds, but the thing is this, and they were quite surprised because they didn't know that here in Germany we have also this big mine and all these problems that is producing with the communities that are living around and the forest that is there, no?
Judith, I know you got to go, but one more question. As Pedro's government enters power, what can listeners expect, and how do you anticipate he'll try to tackle, or what do you think he'll try to tackle during his first 100 to 150 days?
I think there is a big expectation with Gustavo Petro government. And I think it's a little bit that will happen, that it's happening in Chile, no? That finally with Gabriel Boric, that also won the elections. And he was close to, for example, to Mapuche, that is the indigenous people that are living there in Chile. And there was a conflict there. But right now it seems that it's not dealing as the people there expected. So I think that there is a lot of expectation because there is a lot of things that the people that vote for him want to change. But maybe 4 years, it's not enough time. But yes, so as I told you, focusing more in social issues and the fact that, for example, he's right now choosing the people that will do this government with him. So he's really taking people that is expert in their areas. So at least it seems that it's a good start, but we have to really take care about what he promised and what he's doing. And this is something that I think that civil society will be pushing to get these promises and that these promises became facts.
Thank you for taking so much time out of your schedule with us today and explaining these things. Truly appreciated. Where can listeners, Judith, find you? And for that matter, what are you working on now?
Okay, so I'm. You can find me on Twitter or Facebook or in Deutsche Welle website. You can see all my articles there. Right now, I'm working in a project that is linked with environmental organizations in Spain, but I have other things also with Chile and other Latin America countries that you can follow in Deutsche Welle website.
Wonderful. Gracias, Judith. We'll put a few of those links then into the show notes. And again, thanks so much for coming on to the show. And in this case, letting us make you late for your other activities.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. I hope that it was interesting for you.
Absolutely, Judith. And a big thanks to all of you who have tuned in and stayed tuned in. You have been listening to the Energy Transition Podcast, a product of the Heinrich Böll Stiftung's EnergyTransition.org platform. We'd like to thank the Energy Transition team in the EU office in Brussels, Lisa Tostado, Martin Keim, and Joan Lanfranco for their assistance. Thanks also for your edits and support, Dr. Seuss. And lastly, a huge shout out once again to our podcast's amazing producer, the sound guru, master of disaster, and the man sometimes with a plan, Christian Kreienborg. From the former German capital city of Bonn, I wish you all smooth sailing on what could be rough seas ahead. Until next time.